Wednesday, February 22nd, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, I report on my experiences at KatsuCon 12.
Let's do this!
So, you all probably noticed that yesterday's episode was a mite short.
Because Rim deleted it.
Yep. You see, I discovered something that I'm glad I discovered it now, as opposed to in the future when perhaps we did a more important episode, or maybe we had an interview. But basically, in Audacity, you save things as a template. So I had a template saved that has, you know, the opening music, the thing of the day music, the closing music, the let's do this. And then I put in the front half and the back half of the show.
Don't give away our secret. They think we actually say let's do this every day.
Yeah, we've perfected the art of saying let's do this in the exact same way.
Yeah.
Without fail.
Yep. Exactly.
See, we used to actually say let's do this every day. And one day we said it really well and we listened to the recording. We're like, wow. We'll never say it better than that. Let's just use that one forever.
Yep.
And until we think of something else, we might change that someday, but we got good feedback on it early on, and we're sticking with it.
Well, when we get the new hardware, we should probably re-record everything.
Yeah. Because like I said yesterday, in the part of the podcast that got cut off, I finally ordered a dynamic range compressor.
Compressor. Yeah. About the associated German band.
Yeah, whenever we do the show on how to do a show, which, while Scott doesn't want to do one because every podcast has done one, a lot of you have been asking for it, but we'll do a show on how we do the podcast, and I'll talk about what a compressor is and why, I don't care how, like, unprofessional or just I'm doing a podcast for fun you are, a compressor is like $70, and it'll make your podcast sound twice as good, as you'll see when I get one.
Mm-hmm. Actually, if you really, really, really want to hear a podcast about how to do a podcast, I think that there's one called Podcast 411, or there's at least a website called Podcast 411 that has
someone
all this stuff.
Someone else told me about them, because they were talking, they're the ones who talked about Gizmo and how it's a good way to do podcast interviews.
Yeah, Podcast 411 has a whole thing about compressors and like how to use it and what to set the settings at, and they have all kinds of shit.
But anyway, what happened to yesterday's episode, we always record the show in two segments, front half, back half, just because that way we have time to collect our notes before we do our main bit. And I opened up the after I recorded everything and did the post production on it, I opened up Audacity and I opened the wrong template. The template happened to have a WAV file in it that had the same name as the WAV file that I had just recorded the back half of the show under. And Audacity somehow decided that when it opened, hey, I'm going to delete and overwrite that other file there and put my file there instead.
Good job.
Yeah, so I deleted the hell out of that template, and I moved all the templates to another directory, and that'll probably be the last time that ever happens.
Don't screw it up again.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see.
But you did most of the talking, and you hurt your throat doing it, and you had nothing to show for it.
Yeah, I don't feel too bad. I wasn't too enamored with yesterday's episode because I had drunk quite a bit of NyQuil right before it, and I kind of rambled a lot.
It was an okay episode.
Yeah, but I realized that I probably talked in more depth about the video game room than was probably necessary, so I can cover it in succinctness.
Well, let's say one sentence each for each thing we talked about.
What, yesterday?
Yeah.
All right. Old school video gaming was awesome at KatsuCon.
Punk kids don't get it.
Yeah, punk kids totally don't get it.
Yeah, one sentence.
All right, fine.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we've got a news bit, and because I'm pretty much going to talk for the entire second half of the show, here's Scott.
Oh, okay. So if you don't know, there's this car called the Enzo Ferrari, a.k.a. the Ferrari F60. There are maybe, I don't know, 399 of these in the whole entire world.
You know what? In the news post, I'll link to the Top Gear where they show an Enzo Ferrari and talk about it.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
So that way you guys will, one, you'll learn about Top Gear, and two, you'll see what we're talking about and why we cried when we found out what happened to this car.
All right, so there are 399 of these in the world. Now,
398.
Well, okay. they cost $1 million each. They're made by hand by Ferrari in the Ferrari factory. They're really wicked fast and really wicked cool, and yeah, the Top Gear will teach you all about that. But you can't even get one. Like, let's say I had $2 million, right? The car is $1 million. You think I could just buy one? Well, you'd be wrong if you thought that. The only way you can buy one is if Ferrari comes to you and says, hey, we'd like to offer you the opportunity to give us $1 million and purchase this car. And, well, they're already all sold, so to famous people and rich people all around the world. So if you didn't get one already, and a rich guy doesn't give his to you, which is a fat chance, good luck.
So I'm sure you all have heard of Gizmondo.
Well, Gizmondo, if you don't know, is this guy and this company tried to release a new portable gaming system fairly recently, like within the past year, and it failed, of course. But the concept behind this system was actually to have pretty good hardware, and it had cool stuff, like it would have a GPS in it, so that you could play cool GPS-based games, which is a good idea, I thought. All sorts of Wi-Fi and wireless, and I think it had a little cell phone thingy in it. You know, it had the potential if it had games and the industrial design of it was a bit better.
But no, it failed. Company practically going out of business, no money, horrible problems.
Right. The other problem with it was that the sales model was you can either buy one for a shit ton of money or get one for a reasonable cost, but then you'll keep seeing all kinds of advertisements while you play. Yeah, okay. And the thing wasn't really available anywhere, and no one knew or cared about it. They didn't really...
So anyway, none of this has anything to do with the story.
It does have a little tiny bit to do with the story. Is the guy in the story, Stefan Eriksson, 44 years old, was the executive of Gizmondo.
And guess who had an Enzo Ferrari?
Stefan Eriksson.
So what did he do with this Enzo Ferrari?
Well, he was driving it around, I think, California, it says?
I don't remember. I saw
somewhere.
The article this morning.
Actually, he wasn't driving it. His German friend, Dietrich.
Whoa. If I had an Enzo Ferrari, and I let you drive it, and you crashed it, and you didn't die, I would have killed you.
What? Okay, so here's the story. Stefan Eriksson, the owner of the car, was too drunk. But he was the passenger, so that was okay. Dietrich, who we don't know, because basically he crashed the car into a pole, tearing the front half apart from the rear half. So he basically split the car in half. Got out of the car and ran away. And they don't know where he is.
Great.
Which is exactly what he should fucking do. Because if he stayed... he would have been in more danger from the guy sitting next to him than from the car accident.
I guess the rest of the Enzo Ferraris are one step closer to the quickening now.
Yep, but the moral of this story is that $1 million worth of car does provide $1 million worth of safety features, and they work.
I mean, they were probably going in well excess of 100 miles an hour.
It's really hard not to in this car. I mean,
you have enough trouble staying under 90 in your freaking Mazda 3.
This thing has a top speed of like 225 miles an hour. So, and it has the linear transmission. So unless you like stay in like a really low gear, or if you refrain from pushing the sport button or the race button, yes, you'll see when you watch it in Top Gear. It's really hard to not go fast. So yeah, goddamn. This guy could have just given it to me, and it would still be here. There would still be 399 Ferraris. But
you know what? I think you'd have more than one speeding ticket if you owned an Enzo Ferrari.
I don't care, because I just make a big pile of them, and right before I had to pay them all, I would sell the Ferrari and pay them all off.
You know what I'd do? Every time I got pulled
over... And by then, I would pick up so many ladies, it wouldn't matter.
All right, there's a much simpler way around this. Every time you get pulled over, offer to take the cop for a drive in it instead.
Nah, that would
no
work.
Cop would pass that down.
That would work half the time.
That would work 100% of the time, I guarantee it.
Well, you know what? There's a problem with that, is that if there's someone in the car with you, you pretty much have to leave them on the side of the road. It's a two-seater.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bad.
Things of the day.
The first thing I want to do is, I'm not sure everyone realizes this, but the thing of the day is something we do every podcast where we say... two cool things, or one cool thing each that we saw on the internet or somewhere today. And
pretty much since the last episode, the coolest thing of note we have experienced in some way.
Yeah, so if you go to our website, frontrowcrew.com, we have links to the things of the day. So you should go there and look at the things of the day if you haven't already seen them. So yeah, I don't think enough people are doing that. Anyway, so my thing of the day, it seems to be a lot of news about Spider-Man lately. You know, we had that old Spider-Man Japanese thing, and
yep.
There was a funny thing I saw today somewhere with a Spider-Man joystick that was pretty funny.
Oh, Spider-Man plug and play.
Yeah, okay, but the funniest, well, I don't know how funny it is, but there was a comic book store, and a guy with a Spider-Man mask went into the comic book store. That's not strange at all. That's perfectly normal.
In fact, they interview the guys, and both guys are like, we saw this guy with a Spider-Man mask come in. It's a comic shop.
Yeah, what the hell? But the guy, if you've ever been to a comic shop, most of them keep the really expensive comics in glass cases with a little lock, you know, with a sliding glass back and forth, you know, so that you can't just walk over and touch them. You have to ask someone to come over and unlock the case, and they slide the glass, and they take it out, and, you know, whatever. But this comic book store was one of the few that had, they had an X-Men number one, and a Fantastic Four number one, and an Amazing Fantasy 15. If you don't know, Amazing Fantasy 15 is the first comic book ever that had Spider-Man in it. So before Amazing Fantasy 15 was sold in stores, Spider-Man did not exist. And some kid with a Spider-Man mask walks into the store, takes a hammer, he smashes the case open, grabs the comics, and runs. It was like a zillion, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of comics. He just ran away.
Just watch it. There's an actual video of the Spider-Man guy stealing it.
There's a whole video of the local news reporting on it and the security tape and everything. So just watch it.
Yeah, he totally got away with it.
It's super irony. I mean,
I'm telling you, Spider-Man's trying to hide his origin. So he's stealing the, you know, number ones.
Yeah. It's kind of weird, though. It's like those comic book guys were so fat and schlubby. Spider-Man didn't even have to use his super spider strength or his webbing or anything to get away.
Yeah, he just had to use the dreaded fence and jump over it.
And the dreaded hammer to break the glass.
So my thing of the day, I'm not really going to talk about it right now. I just used it mostly because I want to link to it. But it's a movie that I saw at KatsuCon. And I've got quite a bit to say about this movie. So the link is there. It's probably the best link I could find. I mean, this is a movie that has received zero votes on IMDb. No one's seen it.
Well,
yeah.
At least it exists on IMDb. Sometimes the movies aren't even there if they're really rare.
So, you'll have to pardon my voice if I sound a little odd, but I'm still quite sick from KatsuCon.
Illin.
Yeah, I'm illin like a villain.
That's bad.
Yeah, that was terrible. So I'm all Novocaine, well, not Novocaine, but I'm all NyQuil'd up. I got my Ricolas in my mouth, my Gobstoppers, and my water and my tea, and we'll see how we do. But, as you all know, I spent last weekend at KatsuCon 12, and thus is my con report. Now, KatsuCon 12, KatsuCon in general, is in Washington, D.C., which I haven't been there outside of anime cons. It's not the best place to have a convention.
The thing is that they have really good buildings there to put conventions in, but the surrounding area really makes it painful to have the convention.
I mean, let me put it this way. KatsuCon 12, right? Parking at the hotel, $28 a day.
Wow.
The nearest parking garage that had any cheaper price, it was like $15 a day, and it was a good 10-minute walk away from the con.
The only time I've seen it that bad is when I went to the All-Star the All-Star game of baseball in Fenway Park in Boston. The one parking lot was $25. The parking lot right across from the stadium was $35 for the game. That's the worst I ever seen. So 28 a day, that's pretty bad considering it's a hotel in a city as opposed to an All-Star game of baseball.
Now, I got to say, I'm real happy with KatsuCon because Thursday before I left for the con, I was looking at the website, you know, to get directions, and I noticed that under driving directions, they had multiple paragraphs with big, bold, red letters telling me not to drive to the con. They told me that there's no parking, that if I find parking, it'll be expensive, and that they're not kidding. They recommend that I park at a metro station and come in, or take a train or something. And they weren't kidding. I drove to, I think it was Greenbelt Station, which is right off of I-95. It has its own exit off of the freeway to this station. Parked for free.
That's pretty cool.
I spent $4 taking the train to the con and then on Sunday back from the
con. How close was the train to the con?
It was about 25 minutes, I'd say.
No, I meant walking from the destination train station.
The station was right next to the convention.
Awesome.
Like a 2-minute walk.
Sweet.
It was fantastic. Meanwhile, my friend Scott Johnson parked at the hotel and was out about $120. I warned him. I told him he couldn't even find his way to the hotel. It was fantastic.
Guess what he deserves.
Yeah, I don't mean to rag on him. We actually had a good time. I went to the con with, it was myself and Scott Johnson. You may know him as the legendary Scott Johnson. Him and I go around speaking at anime cons, as like on club summits and other panels. And we were actually featured in Newtype once.
In a very, very tiny, tiny square.
It was a full-page article. But the funny thing was, the picture shows, both pictures are like me speaking. Like, I'm in the center and I like got my big hands thick.
They're pretty bad pictures, though.
But the article doesn't mention me. The article mentions the legendary Scott Johnson, and it uses the word legendary.
Yeah, it does. I've seen it.
Yeah, but we didn't actually go to this con to speak. We just went to actually enjoy the con. Mm-hmm. And we went with a bunch of his friends from back home in Pennsylvania, which I know them. They're cool people. And we went with a friend of ours, a con friend, Lara, who has been... We met her a long time ago at, I think, Anime Central. And we just go to all these cons together all the time. I seem to have a lot of con friends, people I only really know at conventions. But I see him every year.
That's cool. It's like, I know when I was a kid, they used to be like school friends, friends on the block, you know, who live near you, but you didn't go to school with them. And then, like... kids, camp kids, like you knew them from summer camp.
Yep.
You'd have all these different groups of friends, and they would, you know, be from different places.
I really like I like con friends. It really shows how, I guess, close-knit this geek community is.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm going pretty much chronological order here, just because I could organize it anyway, whatever. So I show up, and I find the hotel, and it's the Omni Showroom in downtown D.C. It was rather posh and fancy-looking.
Well, all hotels are fancy-looking.
No, I mean,
they have a lot of that.
Let me put it this way. It was posh and fancy in the sense that there were breakables within touching distance everywhere.
Oh, all
hotels have
stuff like that.
Huge chandeliers, like, right above my head. Big, giant, just displays of, like, old pottery and vases and dishes and wine bottles. And, like, little tiny tables that look like if I just leaned against them, they'd break.
All hotels have stuff like that. It's like, even, like, the crummiest Holiday Inn in the lobby... They have
No.
Some stuff.
This hotel, compared to, say, every other convention hotel I've ever been to.
Well, they just
to.
Have more stuff.
I've been to a lot of hotel conventions, like Anime Central and OhioCon. And they were nice, you know, typical hotel stuff. But they didn't have the sheer level of breakableness within reach of congoers.
Eh, whatever.
I mean, basically, this hotel had never hosted an anime con before. And I actually interviewed a bunch of the staff later. They really had no idea what they were getting into with this. I mean, Thursday night, there are just hundreds of people milling around in costumes, talking to each other, sitting on every surface in sight, wandering into the bar, getting drunk, running around, yelling. And I see these staff people just staring at him like, what the hell? You have rooms. Why are you down here? What's going on? It was, yeah, I wish I had the interviews to actually play for you, but I interviewed a bunch of people with this tape recorder that my friend Scott had there, and when I got home, I learned that of the 4 playback heads that we have in our house, not a single one of them is functional anymore.
We can't play tapes.
Yeah, we have...
I consider that to be a good thing.
The first tape recorder ate the tape and exploded it. I had to pull it out of the cartridge and re-spool it into a different one. The second tape recorder was full of battery acid, and then when we finally plugged it into the wall, it also had a short.
We should get, I don't know, something.
Well, luckily, I remember the interviews. Now, I have a few things to say about the hotel.
He's going to put words in people's mouths.
Not really. The interviews were actually very to the point, and with one exception, everyone was very cool.
Someone wasn't cool?
Yeah, one guy wasn't cool.
Oh, I want to hear that.
But basically, the hotel was set up like really well for a convention. It was perfect. Like there was enough space. There weren't like choke points in the hallways where you couldn't get through.
Yeah, I looked at the map, and it actually looked like it was really had nice, good. The rooms were all the right size, and KatsuCon used the rooms well.
And the Artist Alley setup was fantastic. I'll get to that later. I mean, because last year KatsuCon was in a fairly crappy hotel, and it was a mess. This year was great. Now, the only problem I saw, not with KatsuCon, just with the hotel, was that basically their elevator is the only way to get to rooms because the hotel is freaking huge.
No stairs?
There were stairs right there, which was fantastic, but most people's rooms are, you know, on the 7th, 8th floor.
Oh, terrible.
The elevators, there were 2 for each wing of the hotel, total. and they were tiny. Like, actually, Saturday, I saw this fat dude stand in front of the elevator, and basically, if he got into the elevator, no one could ride with him.
Wow.
And there was a line to get into the elevator, and kids kept pushing past him and getting in, and he couldn't get into the elevator.
He should have taken the stairs. That's what he deserves.
Yeah, he
so
wouldn't
fat.
Take the
maybe,
stairs.
Well, guess what? I had to lose some weight. Maybe he could stand there until he loses weight. I think he better off taking the stairs.
The elevators didn't fail like they have at many other cons, just because, you know, anime cons, people are wandering around constantly. And elevators just, like, at Otakon, they turn off the escalators so they don't break.
Good idea.
But the elevators didn't break, but there was such a line that it was basically impossible for people to go to their rooms during the day.
That's fine. I would go to my room when everyone else is doing something important.
Oh, you know what was great? Our room was next to the stairs and the elevators on the first floor.
Awesome.
I had to go up one flight. So I never felt bad. I'd carry my DS around, and then, hey, I don't want my DS anymore. I'd just pop back to the room, drop it off, come back down. It took about a minute.
Dude, if we ever go to a con that's in a hotel, we have to get rooms in the lowest floor possible.
Yes, from now on, I'm going to request rooms like next to an elevator on the first floor.
Next to the stairs on the first floor.
I mean, I got to say, having a room that close to the con made my KatsuCon experience at least twice as good.
Yeah, imagine if you're on the eighth floor, how much time you would have lost going all the way up there, waiting in elevator lines.
I wouldn't have been carrying my DS around all the time like I did.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind, everybody. If you're going to a con that's in one hotel, self-contained, get rooms at low elevation, no matter how cool you think it might be to be up high.
I mean, I guess there are two types of anime cons now, at least of the bigger cons. There's the convention center con, and there's the hotel con. And KatsuCon, Anime Central, those are hotel cons. And the only real difference is that a hotel con goes 24/7. I mean, at KatsuCon, the video game room and the anime rooms, 4 a.m., you could just wander in and play Halo or DDR or Guitar Heroes.
Awesome.
Instead of having room parties, people just all got together somewhere at the con and did stuff.
Mm.
You know, unlike Otakon, where everything goes until 2 a.m., and then they pull the fire alarm and kick us out.
Yeah, fire alarm.
And I like both types of cons equally. I think that both have a lot to offer.
Yeah, they have their place. But you're not a real man until you've experienced an Otakon fire alarm.
Yeah, when you're in the hotel in the con at, you know, 2:25 and they pull the fire alarm and there's policemen yelling, "Get the hell out! Go away! The con is closed! What are you doing?"
That's the best. And then some one guy tries to hide in the convention center and gets arrested for not evacuating.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe how many people try to just hide at Otakon.
It's great.
But anyway, also Thursday night, there's a bar on the first floor, and it was a pretty classy bar. Bartenders were cool. They seemed to be jiving with this whole, wow, there's a bunch of freaks in our bar thing.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I ended up hung out with a good friend, Tex, we knew from various cons and from our old college. And he introduced us to, God, I forgot his name, it's on the tip of my tongue, but he's the head of NekoCon. And he was in the bar, and we hung out with him for a while. He was a really cool guy. So I just wanted to give him a little shout-out, because he was really awesome. And I'm going to try to go to NekoCon, since I've actually haven't been to it recently, and I'd like to. It's in Virginia Beach, and it looks like an awesome con.
I don't know. It's called NekoCon.
It's not
a
furry con.
Me off.
It's
yeah.
not AnthroCon. I'll give you that.
But it puts me off still. They should really think about, I don't know, maybe think about the name or something. I don't know.
Hey, what about, you know, YuriCon?
Yeah, I don't go to that.
Yeah.
I'm never gonna.
So Friday morning, I didn't pre-register or anything. KatsuCon for me is usually the day before someone says, hey, you want to go to KatsuCon? And I drive down. So I get in the registration line. Well, I go to find the registration line. I can't find it. So I finally find the registration area, and I see this huge line next to the pre-reg sign, and I can't find the registration line. So I look around, and eventually I see some guy with a staff shirt. I'm like, where's the registration line? And he says, you're it. And he walks me over, and I get my badge.
Awesome.
Yep. The regular reg line actually got horrible, but not until about 11. And I did this at 9. So I forgot that if you're not at Otakon, no one really gets to the con early.
Yeah.
But I guess the moral is, don't pre-register for KatsuCon.
Well, here's the thing, is I think a lot of people are pre-registering now, not because they don't think they'll get a registration. You can get a registration to any of these cons.
Well, you get the discount, too.
It's the discount. And a lot of these people are poor. I think if you have a lot of money, unless you're going to a con that has a sellout possibility like Otakon.
Or if you're getting there Thursday and they have a Thursday badge pickup.
Thursday badge pickup.
Thursday
is
badge
important.
Pickup is often key.
Yeah. Unless they have some other reason besides price to pre-register, like maybe a giveaway or something. I know the New York Comic Con gave away action figures to the first 1,000 pre-registers.
Yep, Serenity action figures.
Yep, and not the Christian comic either.
Or the Serenity channel that was on the TVs at Katsucon.
Yeah, anyway, unless there's another reason besides money, and you have enough money, just register at the con. It's not any different, you know?
And you know what? The line is usually less.
Plus, pre-registering means you have like this commitment. If you don't pre-register and you decide, oh, I only want to go one day, or maybe, you know what, I'm going to leave on Sunday. Things suck. You can do that sort of thing.
Though I will say, from a guy running a con perspective, you want people to pre-register.
Oh, absolutely. Then you know how many people are coming.
I mean, if you really want to support a con, like you love a con and it's your favorite con, pre-register, because it really helps them out in terms of getting their funding together and budgeting and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The more people pre-register, the better the con's going to be.
Yeah, if everyone for the con pre-registers and the con knows exactly how many people are coming and they know exactly what they need to do. If no one pre-registers, they don't even have the con because they can't guarantee enough people will register at the door to make it work.
Now, KatsuCon is following the trend that many cons have been doing of not having events before, like 2 o'clock or so on Friday, which is a great thing. Because while I get there every con, Thursday morning for Otakon, most people don't really roll in until 10 or 11, and then they have to stand in line, and no one's really ready to actually do anything at the con until around 1. So, I mean, all like the video game room and the artist alley and everything opened right away at like 10 a.m., 9 a.m., but there were no events until about 2, which was fantastic. Because everyone was kind of
not even like
out.
A little panel here, panel there.
No, they didn't screw any panelists by saying, "Hey, you have to do your panel before anyone even has their badge."
Mm. See, the thing is, it's like it seems that at anime cons and things that all the people who have things to set up, the dealers, the artists, everyone, it seems like they get there the same time as the participants of the convention, all the members, and. So the members get there, and while they're waiting in line, the other people are setting up, and there's like this area of time early Friday that's sort of like lost. Like, it's not lost because you can still do fun stuff if you're awesome, but it's like, what if you're the first guy in the pre-reg line just because of, chance, let's say.
Yeah, you know what? It wasn't lost at all at KatsuCon, because starting at noon, they started doing all the showings in the anime rooms. The video game room opened up right a fucking way. So yeah. I went down. That was the first thing I did, was go into the video game room and play some old school games.
Yeah, see, that's fun. But to compare it to something like, the big Comic Cons or something like that, where, like, the New York Comic Con is going to be this Friday, right? Or like E3. If you show up at E3 right away, the Nintendo people are already, before anyone gets there, before the first person gets their badge, every single person who has a display. Or a table or whatever.
I point out that there's
already there and waiting.
I point out that there's no displays or anything like that. All the events that don't happen until later are events that people have to actively go to, and they're a one-time thing.
Yeah, I know,
early on Friday, they're wasted.
But think about this. When you get to Otakon, right, the artists in Artist Alley get there the same time as people who are going to the Artist Alley. If it could do one tiny bit better, would be before anyone even gets in line for a badge, all the artists are in Artist Alley with a table set up.
You realize that's silly and impossible for a lot of reasons.
I know, but it's a problem.
No, it's not. No, it's not at all.
Other cons do it. They have everyone already set up before anyone gets in.
That's because those are cons where those are exhibitors. I mean, the dealers were already set up ready to go.
That's the word I was looking for, exhibitor.
Yeah, there's almost no exhibitors at an anime con.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they had just this kind of open time where everyone was just kind of hanging out, getting ready. And then starting at 1 o'clock, they had the first panel.
Mm.
And I didn't actually do anything until opening ceremonies at 3. I almost always avoid opening ceremonies at anime cons. No offense to anime cons, but they're almost always terrible.
And boring. I've been to 2 different opening ceremonies at 2 different... Maybe I've been to 3 or 4 opening ceremonies. I don't even remember them. Some of them are so bad. I see, there was Otakon, which was just corny. And there was PenguinCon, which was the guy proposed to his wife.
Now, Anime Central always had great opening ceremonies. Like, they're an exception to the rule. And KatsuCon, the opening ceremonies weren't great, but they were definitely worth going to. It was a very informative opening ceremonies. They went through all the con rules.
Stop pausing to chew your Ricolas.
I'm sick. What do you want? So they went through all their con rules. They did funny stuff. They announced all the changes to the schedule and everything. And it was generally entertaining and worth seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Then right after that, the AMV contest, which I actually sat through.
The whole thing?
I walked out about 15 minutes early just to go to a panel.
All right.
But unlike the previous years at many cons, I mean, there's been definitely a drought of good anime music videos. And it really didn't break until the previous Otakon when there were actually some good videos. And I've seen this trend of good videos continuing. So I think AMVs are back on the rise.
I think it's because the only people still doing AMVs and still caring about them are the people who are really into it. You don't have this glut of kids who are like, AMVs are the new cool thing. I'm going to make Naruto plus Linkin Park. Whee!
Oh, you do, but a lot of the big cons don't show them anymore.
Well, the big cons never really showed them in the first place.
I submit to you Otakon 2 years ago.
They didn't actually show those. They showed,
many of them.
They showed them in the crap room.
Showed crap Naruto videos in the main one, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But the AMVs were good. And I got to say, I don't know what's up, but Utena seems to be making this huge resurgence lately.
Maybe it was...
There were at least four AMVs to Utena in the AMV show. There was also a panel on Utena.
Maybe it was the recent box set release? I don't know.
Also, there was a pile of art, both in the artist alley and in the art show of Utena. I even bought something really cool that I'll talk about in a bit.
Hmm.
The other thing I noticed is that last year, all the AMVs I watched, they mostly seemed to come from the first four or so episodes of shows that had come out recently. Now, this year, almost every AMV came from the last four episodes and spoiled everything. Though I gotta say, the two notable videos that I saw of the whole show were, one, there was one to Last Exile, and it was Killer Queen to basically Maestro Delfine.
No, that fits.
If you've seen Last Exile, that's actually pretty hilarious.
Nice little character.
Yep, and it was well done.
Mosaic, I guess.
And someone did this video to Utena, the show, though it had tiny clips from the movie, called Embers, and it's freaking amazing. I'd say it's up there with Hit Me Baby One More Time.
Nah, I don't know.
I'll download
That's
it.
That's real tough.
I'll download it and we'll watch. It's really well done. Mm. It doesn't beat Hit Me Baby One More Time.
We'll see.
It's up there.
Whatever.
So after that, the art auction was awesome. It was the quality of Otakon, but much smaller because, you know, there's less people. I saw a lot of really good art. I bid on a hell of a lot of art, and I got outbid on most of it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's one little, it was this cool little print someone made of, like, a kitsune. Like, original art is really cool. And I bid $15. I come back the next day, someone bid $16 on top of me.
That's all eBay action.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
But the thing is, if something gets four bids, it goes to the auction, and then you're screwed, because it's going to go for $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel bad, because not 10 minutes later, I come back, and someone else had sniped that kid and bid $17. So I gave up on it.
Mm.
But someone made this really cool tissue print Utena piece. I'll scan it in at some point so you can all see it. It's really cool. And the minimum bid was like $9, and I wanted it. Like, I saw it, and I decided I'm leaving with that. And I bid like $25, and no one even considered outbidding me, and I got it.
Mm.
I usually lose the bidding at cons because I bid, you know, Friday, and then I forget that I bid on things, and then Sunday I go to pick my art up, and I've been outbid on everything.
Yeah, if I wanted to really win some, if I saw an art in the art auction that I had to have, I would just come back on Sunday at like the last minute and go through.
Yep.
I wouldn't even bother Friday or Saturday, you know, it's not worth it. That's how you win on eBay, is you have these little sniping programs that bid at the last second. You have to bid at the last second, or else you're not going to win, you know?
Now, the Artist Alley was really good. It was definitely a step up from last KatsuCon's Artist Alley, though last KatsuCon's was screwed by the fact that it was in a different hotel.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a lot of good artists. It was really roomy and open. The only thing was, I didn't really buy anything from it, because while it was really good, there were a lot of... There were a decent number of people who were basically selling the kind of things that Otakon just banned from their artist alley.
Oh, really?
Yeah, things that are obviously just, wow, that's a print I can buy somewhere else that I just made. Or, wow, that's a Mario flag made with felt that can be bought from somewhere else. You know, things like that. Basically bootleg goods.
Yeah, see, I think there's something, too, that the bigger cons, where you get bigger artists coming in, so that people who aren't so much artists are, like, afraid to go in on it. Or it's so big that the real artists, like, rush in and, you know, and try to get tables right away. And those bootleg people don't really try so hard, you know, they don't.
Though what made me really happy was that there were a lot of webcomic artists and comic artists and that sort of thing at the con in the Artist Alley. Mm-hmm. Dominic Deegan was there. I've read his comic off and on. VG Cats, the guy, was there. Whole bunch of other
guys seems to be going to every con.
He goes to every freaking con. I was going to interview him, but my tape ran out.
Uh-huh.
Which is fine, because I wouldn't be able to play it anyway.
Yeah.
Now, the video game room, I talked about it yesterday in the Lost episode, but basically, they split it into two sections, old school and new school. And the new school was, you know, typical Halo, whatever. I actually played Halo 2 for the first time, and I stand by my opinion that it's not a good game.
Yep.
Though I will admit, in the honesty, in the fairness of openness, whatever, Scott Johnson kicked my ass. He kicked all of our asses. He won handily.
Well, that's because he has all those used GameCube games he bought for like
$10. Yeah, like X13 or whatever that game was.
Yeah, they're all these, you know, console controller-based FPSs. So playing against you, Mr. Mouse and Keyboard, he basically kicked your ass.
Now, the old school room, basically they had all these original old school arcade game cabinets. And it was freaking awesome. They had, like, Pole Position 2, Marvel Madness, Gorf,
yeah, it doesn't Zevius. It doesn't seem like they had super old stuff, but they had semi-old stuff.
It was old, classic stuff.
It was like late 80s kind of action, you know?
There was no Sinistar.
It was mid-80s, actually, not late 80s.
Yeah, we're talking Tekken 2 type stuff. Though that was actually one of the newer games there.
Tekken 2 is, like, 90s-ish.
Yeah, that was one of the newest games there. You know, they had the original Spy Hunter.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Though, I interviewed a bunch of punk kids. And these kids were born, you know, they're like 14. They'd never seen these games before. One kid thought these were MAME cabinets. He didn't realize that these games actually were arcade games back in the day.
Wow.
Because he'd seen these games on, like, the GameCube, Midway Arcade Classic, whatevers. And he didn't realize that, no, those are arcade machines.
You know what we should do one day? We should get together and have, like, an internet field trip. Like, we should, and get a bunch of punk kids, and they pay X amount of dollars, and we'll rent a coach bus. And we'll take them all to Fun Spot, and we'll show them what games are supposed to be.
But I gotta say, everyone, even the kids who were too young to know what these games were, seemed to love them. And I discovered that being drunk, you are much better at Robotron than when you are sober. I think it's because you're not as afraid of the robots.
It all depends on the kind of game. Some games, if you're drunk, you'll just die. Like,
if you're drunk in Spy Hunter, you just crash into a tree.
It all depends on how much precision you need. Like, in Robotron, it's not really about precision. It's about dodging the robots. But in a game like, I don't know, Asteroids, which you can barely... Or Lunar Lander, there you can't play those drunk. You'll just die.
Yep. Now, the dealer's room was actually very good. Though it was weird. It was set in the exhibit hall. And I went to the exhibit hall, and it smelled kind of funny, and the ceiling was weird. And I was wondering, you know, what's up with this room? It's kind of at a slant. Like, the whole room was at a slant. And then I get to the end of the room, and I see parking spaces. And I discover that they've turned the lowest section of the parking garage into an exhibit hall, and that's the dealer's room.
Great.
It worked out really well. That way the dealers had a lot of space.
Yeah, but it smelled and...
No, it didn't smell bad. It just smelled weird. Like, wow. It didn't smell like the inside of a hotel.
Yeah.
Now, there were a lot of good dealers there. I'd say it was comparable, at least in terms of the merchandise
offered. Maybe that's why there was no parking.
No, that wasn't it.
Yeah.
This has been an exhibit hall for a long time.
Oh, wow. Oh, as in they are, like, they physically, with construction, converted...
No, not with construction. Like, they put a drop ceiling in, but they didn't do much to it.
No, but I mean, like, it used to be the parking lot, and they physically turned it into an exhibit hall.
Yeah, they did
not
stuff
like,
to it.
Not like, it's usually the parking lot, but today, dealers are putting their things out in the parking spaces.
Now, I think they can convert it, between the two, but I think it takes a while.
Oh, it's like one of those, okay.
Yeah, but... I mean, I'd say it was comparable to Otakon in terms of the array of merchandise. I didn't see anything was lacking. However, I also didn't see anything I really wanted, because I guess I'm kind of jaded. I mean, cute little things that I can buy anywhere now.
Mm-hmm. The stuff that I'm really looking for now is like, mostly the stuff that's newer. I can't get it in the U.S., and you're giving a good price. Mostly Nintendo, like, keychains and dioramas and all those sorts of things. The dots. That's the stuff that I really want in dealer's
rooms. Yep, I got
now.
A little Mario diorama. I was pleased with that.
Yep.
But it was a good dealer's room. I mean, Katsukan is a good dealer's room. What can I say? They didn't have the super DVD deals you find at, like, Otakon, but what do you expect? I mean, Katsukan's fairly early in the con season.
Yep.
Now, the panels. I usually go to a couple panels at every con, and this is really the only bad point, the only bad thing I can say about this Katsukan 12. I mean, I'm one where if I go to a con... and bad, like it, things aren't going well, I will harp on and report on and yell about every crap thing that happened at the con. I'll rip a con apart.
Well, usually when I report on absolutely anything at all, I just say everything that's negative and everything I didn't say or comment on is assumed to be amazingly positive. So, you know, that's how it is.
I guess I want to say right now that KatsuCon was fantastic. KatsuCon 12 will go down on my list of cons I've been to as one of the best cons I've ever been to. I loved it.
All right.
But I went to two panels at KatsuCon, and I don't think they really screen who their panelists are. Because, I mean, Otakon, I see, like, every panel I've spoken on or gone into, there's always a staffer or someone standing in the room, like, watching the panel. And then they do all these polls, and they always ask people, like, what panels were good? Which panels were bad? What do you think? And I've noticed that panels that were crap never come back to Otakon.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what happens at KatsuCon next year. But basically, I went to the Club Summit panel, and I went to the Utena panel. See, there's all this Utena stuff. Now, the Club Summit panel was just ass. I mean, I hate to sound like, you know, a jerk, but the people didn't really seem to know what they were talking about. They sat down in front of the room and just started talking to people in the front row for a while. Then they talked about club stuff for like a minute or two, and they just kind of trailed off and started chatting with people in the front of the room about anime.
Well, you know what I think it could be, now that I think about it a little bit, is if you look at the schedule, does it look like people were competing? Like, there was some guy who wanted to get a panel, but some other guy already had the panel spot, or?
No, it didn't look like that. I mean, I think it looks like both the panels that I went to were run by staffers. They were just normal panels at the con. Like, there was nothing.
See, so at a small con, usually, they need more panels to fill it in. It's not like.
See, no, that is definitely not the case at KatsuCon. They had one panel room,
mm-hmm.
and it was just panels all day. And from the other people I've talked to, almost every panel was great.
Uh-huh.
Or at least, you know, as good as you'd expect.
But I mean, do they have so many people outside of staffers wanting to do panels that they, you know?
Well, I'm fairly certain that there are people who wanted panels that did not get them.
Yeah?
I'm fairly
certain.
Because
usually when staffers do panels, that's because no non-staffer.
Well, also because they tend to be the knowledgeable type people who can run a panel.
Sometimes.
I mean, I guess I just expect some level of professionalism. I mean, even a tiny bit. Just if you're going to run a panel, talk about what you said you'll talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Or something. But these guys just sat at the front of the room and gave kind of bad advice, first off. I mean, they really don't seem to know how to run a club too well. And then they just rambled about anime and talked amongst themselves until the panel ended.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wondered, all right, I mean, I even walked out on it. It was not worth my time.
No, because those people probably weren't, you know, they just go and they say, okay, we're doing a panel. They sit at the top. You know, they don't have a plan. They're not thinking about doing an awesome panel. They
I mean, maybe I'm overcritical.
Start talking and go.
I mean, I thought after I walked out, like, wow, maybe I'm being overcritical. Because, I mean, I do a lot of panels at cons, and I've done it a lot. And I guess I really expect people to put a lot of preparation into it, you know. Have your talking points, have the questions ready, have your have all the people who are on the panel coordinate and ready to go, have contingencies in case no one has questions or in case the crowd sucks or whatever. Just be ready to do something. So I decided, you know, in the interest of fairness, I'd go to one other panel, and that way I'd have kind of a baseline. So I went to the Utena panel the next day, and it was awesome. It was informative. The guy really knew what he was talking about. It was interesting. I mean, he didn't say anything new to me, but I'm a freaking Utena nut.
Yeah.
So, but he was a really cool guy. I would have interviewed if I had time. And actually, at that panel, I got interviewed by some guy from Anime World Order, this anime podcast. And little shout out here, because I wanted to interview him, but I didn't have a recorder bit with me at the time.
Yeah, I started listening to their podcast, and, you know, it's not a 100% perfect podcast, you know.
What podcast is, I note that we, you know, erased yesterday's podcast.
Of course, of course. But the one thing I can say about them that is the best is that they know a lot of shit about anime that I don't know. Like, they had nicknames for directors because they're like, that director always kills everyone of the people in the anime. They called him, like, Kill 'Em All, Tomi, whatever his name was.
Yeah.
They know a lot of stuff. So if you want to, like, really, like, know who directed this and he was also the director of that and, you know, this character designer made this thing in this year, these guys know that stuff in their head. And
I mean,
it's really
Geek
interesting.
Nights covers a lot of stuff. I mean, we're definitely Renaissance geeks. We cast our net very broadly and widely, and we go fairly deep, but These guys just have a missile going straight down into that pool of anime.
Yeah.
I mean, when he interviewed me, and then we talked a bit about, because, you know, I it's funny that I ran all these clubs, and I'm so, like, into this con, anime club, anime thing, and yet, I don't know a lot of this. Like, I don't know much about the directors of most anime.
Yeah.
He asked me, he's doing an informal poll of, name any directors other than Miyazaki. And I can only name two. I can name Anno, you know, from Evangelion. And I knew who Ikuhara was, but it slipped my tongue for some reason. I couldn't come up with his name, but I knew who he was. The creepy guy.
Mm-hmm.
But they were cool guys. They interviewed me. Maybe I'll appear on their podcast whenever they do their Katsukan Con report.
That'd be cool.
But, I mean, the Utena panel was awesome, and the Club Summit panel sucked. So, I guess seeing the Utena panel as good as it was made me at least not feel bad about panning the other panel. Because it wasn't just me being, you know, an overcritical jerk. Now, the last bit, and I saved this for the end because it's something we don't really do at cons anymore, but anime showings.
Okay, so we don't watch anime at cons.
Yeah.
If I watch something at a con, it's because it's not available on the internet easily. It's not available on DVD. It's being shown at the con on a big screen, and it's something that is either really, really awesome or has big, big potential for awesome.
I mean, it used to be.
And I have to see it.
At cons a long time ago, basically just before we started going to cons, that, I mean, DigiSubs weren't readily available.
No one, you know, very few people outside of college had fast internet connections. DigiSubs took a while to make. I think like Gatekeepers is one of the first. So think around that time when Gatekeepers came out in Japan.
Yep. So basically, people would go to cons and there'd be anime they'd never seen before, so they'd watch it.
And there was really no other way for them to watch it. They couldn't easily get it buying it in the store. They couldn't, you know, it used to be an activity at cons where everyone would bring a VCR and blank tapes, and some guy would bring an anime, and everyone would make a copy, and that would be the activity at the con, you know?
Yep. But, I mean, that's kind of waned over the years. Though, actually, when I was walking into the con at the metro station, this is kind of funny, but I'm walking toward the metro station, like out, like, I think 20 miles away from the hotel, and I see this guy, and he's walking toward the metro station as well, and he had a bag with him. He didn't have any anime paraphernalia on at all. No anime t-shirt, nothing. Just a dude. But I saw him, and I immediately thought, that guy's a fanboy. He's going to Katsukan.
It's not hard to use the fanboy dar.
So I walked over to him. I'm like, you're going to Katsukan? He said, yep. And we went together to Katsukan because I wasn't 100% sure about how to get the metro there right. So at least there were two of us, and if we got lost, I wasn't alone.
That's good.
But I was talking to him, and he's definitely... It made me realize that there are essentially three generations of anime fans currently. Well, I guess four, because there's Generation Zero, you know, the guys who, like, discovered anime in the U.S.
These are the people who are watching, you know, things raw in the 70s with translations on a piece of paper in front of them.
Yeah, like, Generation Zero is, like, the earliest proto-fans.
They were watching old Gundams and Space Battleship Yamato, like, when the things came out.
But, like, basically, I realized that I am a second-generation anime fan. I mean, I came in when fan subs were around. DigiSubs didn't exist yet. I mean, I was in fourth grade when I saw Vampire Hunter D for the first time, and that was when I got into anime. But I've seen, like, every old classic, you know, been to the clubs, done the deal. I've been going to cons for years and years. But then Thursday night at the bar, I ran into, you know, my old friend Tex, who's much older than me, and he is definitely a first-generation anime fan.
Yeah, those guys like Star Blazers and Galaxy.
Yeah, all good
whatever.
Stuff. I mean, I'm not disparaging any of these
yeah,
groups
but that's,
of anime
that's
fans.
Just, the, you know, yep, it's a whole guy, different set of shows they like.
Yep, him and the guy who headed NekoCon, they were definitely the generation before me.
I think, isn't Lotos War like the line, like before Lotos War is the old guys and Lotos War and after is us?
Actually, you're not the first person to say that.
Yeah. Well, that's because I've heard people say that's where the line is.
Yeah, because Lotos War was fairly, the original OAV now, not the TV show, was fairly revolutionary when it came out in terms of the animation and everything about it. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was the first anime to be commercially released in the U.S. on DVD.
Could be. I don't know. Oh, DVD.
Yeah, on DVD.
Who knows? Could be.
Because I remember it came out like way before I had a DVD player, and it was like half the cost of the VHS box set, and I wanted it so desperately.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out.
Yeah, like, I'm not sure. That's just my conjecture.
That's the kind of something Anime World Order would just know.
Yeah, so maybe they'll call in, give us some feedback, and say, no, it was actually blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But this kid that I met was definitely of the third generation. Because it's cool, I'm talking to him. And then he asks me, what anime do you like? So I say, well, right now I'm watching Mushishi, and I just finally caught Last Exile, a little late on that. And he's like, all right, never heard of those. So I'm like, all right, fine, I like, I don't know, Tenna, Tyler, Cowboy Bebop, Evangelion. And he's just giving me this blank look the whole time. Escaflowne.
He didn't even know Evangelion, Cowboy Bebop. Cowboy Bebop's on Cartoon Network.
He barely knew them.
What the hell?
So any anime I named, he's like, no. So finally, I'm like, so what do you watch? He's like, yeah, I watch Naruto, etc. Yep. I forget what all he said. It was Thursday. It was a long time ago.
Naruto, Dragon Ball, Bleach, Shonen Fighting Show, Shonen Fighting Show.
I mean, I guess
show.
It's sad, but I was watching anime before he went to school.
Yep.
And I he was a cool kid, and we talked a while, and I gave him a lot of recommendations of totally watch this show and this show and this show. Though I probably mentioned, 100 shows, and he's not going to watch them all.
Not any of them. He probably won't remember a single one.
But he was the first person I've ever met of this new generation of fans who watches anime at cons. Because he talked about how last year he watched all these shows at the con, and this year he was looking forward to a couple shows.
Mm-hmm.
If I'd had a tape recorder, I would have interviewed him about it. Because the only things I watch at cons, to get back to my topic of watching anime at the cons, are usually the Cantonese live-action movies that I can't get anywhere.
Yep, those are the
best.
Or
the premiere anime movies. Every now and then they'll premiere something at a con.
Yeah, when they show, sometimes I think they showed Appleseed in an Otakon.
Yep, yep.
I watched Hero at an Otakon before it was in movie theaters. That was a good one.
Yep, or that hard-to-find stuff like SARS Wars.
Yeah, the stuff that just you didn't know it existed. There's no way you could have found it or known to look for it. But someone at a con, there's that guy that works for the con. You don't know who he is, but he gets this crazy lineup of stuff that's so obscure but so great. And you just have to go and take in what this guy has to offer.
Yep. The live action room at Otakon every year always has just the crazy movies.
Mm-hmm.
And Katsucon was no exception. And I'm a huge Lupin the Third fan, and so is Scott.
Everyone should be a huge Lupin the Third fan. If you're not, or you don't think you are, you are. You just don't know it yet.
We love Lupin. We've seen at least 75% of all the Lupin movies that exist.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, there's a Lupin movie that I had never heard of and did not know existed. And it was shown at Katsucon. It was called Lupin the Third, Strange Psychokinetic Strategy.
That's a crazy name for usually they have more sane names, not, Assassin something or
it
Legend
was made in
1974,
something. And I linked to it as my thing of the day because it's live action.
All right, so who was Lupin?
Oh, freaking, I don't know, actors from the 70s I've never heard of.
Did he have a big fro or did he
No,
have
no, a... no. It was they all looked right. Every character looked the way they should. Now, it wasn't done the way you'd think, maybe a serious live action or a different take on Lupin. It's exactly like the cartoon.
So was it Roger Rabbit?
No, no, no. It was totally live action, but right down to the stupid anime-style comedic BS that you see in every Lupin. I really can't explain it. You just have to see it. Because I missed the first 10 minutes of the movie. I woke up
late. Did
it
even have crazy impossible stuff like cars driving on the side of buildings?
Stuff like that, basically.
Yeah.
Lupin would be standing
on,
there.
Cutting a plane in half and stuff.
Yeah, stuff like that. Lupin would be standing there, and Fujiko's laying there, and he'd stand like he's going to dive into her like he always did in the anime,
mm-hmm.
and then his clothes would just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to see this movie. If I find a way to get it, I will let you all know. This movie was hilarious.
It has to be gettable if the con got it.
Yeah. Well, SARS Wars was here. I still can't get SARS Wars anywhere.
We can get that. That's not hard.
I asked two dealers in the dealer's room. Neither one of them had even heard of SARS Wars.
We'll get it.
The funny thing was, both of them said that they had been asked about it multiple times, and they're going to look into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually was late to this because I woke up late, and since we were, on the first floor, Scott Johnson just got dressed and ran downstairs to the movie. While I'm showering, he calls my cell phone three times in the span of a minute, yelling at me to come down and see this movie. It's the best thing he's ever seen. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, it was fantastic.
So you didn't even see the whole thing. You missed the beginning part.
I missed the very beginning, but apparently it goes into early, early, early Lupin backstory that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
It talks a little bit about Lupin the Second.
Lupin the Second.
And Jigen meets Lupin.
Holy crap.
And it's awesome.
All right.
See it. See it, see it, see it.
You should see anything that says Lupin on it, no matter what it is.
Yeah, I mean, the worst Lupin ever made is Babylon Gold, and even that is worth watching.
It's worth watching just so you believe us when we say that motorcycles drive around on clown faces.
Yeah, the opening scene of that
movie. Wait. Motorcycles on clown faces. Think about that. Now, whatever you're thinking, that's not right. That's not what you're going to see. You're going to see something even crazier. But it's still going to be motorcycles and clown faces.
Oh, that made me think of one of the AMVs was to Utena. Not the one I talked about that was awesome, another one that was okay. And this AMV basically follows the plot of the Utena movie all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike most Utena AMVs, it goes from cool serious to showing the naked cars.
Ah.
And all Scott Johnson's friends who were sitting with us there had never seen the Utena movie.
They never saw the naked cars?
They had never seen much Utena.
Oh, if you don't know, the Utena movie is way different from the TV show, and at the end of it, there are naked cars.
Now, you might wonder, what's a naked car?
Well, if you watch the end of the Utena movie, you will see a naked car.
You'll be thinking the whole time, naked car, what the hell?
As in, vroom vroom, let's go, Ferrari Enzo.
Naked like Lupin.
Naked like no clothing. No clothing. Vroom vroom. Internal combustion engine. Indy 500.
So, there have been like 3 Utena videos already. And they keep turning to us like, wow, this Utena show actually looks like it might be worth watching. Or like, wow, I didn't think that show was serious or good.
Mm.
And then this video comes on, and they're watching it, and it's going. And then the naked car thing happens, and the video keeps going. And they turn to look at me like, what the hell kind of show is this? And Scott and I are just laughing our asses off.
Naked cars in the movie. Oh, yeah.
So I hope that was coherent. I'm quite sick, as you might have gathered from the previous several podcasts. And I'm probably going to pass out and not go to work tomorrow after this show. But in sum, other than that one tiny thing about the crap panel, KatsuCon was freaking amazing. And if any of you need an anime con to go to and can't make it to Otakon, KatsuCon is right up there in terms of awesome.
In geography terms, DC. I mean, if you're close enough to go to KatsuCon, you're probably going to Otakon, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was weird. I drove past Otakon, or where Otakon is, to get to KatsuCon. And I was driving, and I saw Inner Harbor exit. And I got into the right lane. And then I realized, wait a minute, I'm not going to Otakon, and I got out of the right lane.
Mm-hmm.
And then I drove another 30
miles. That's the only time we ever really go down that way.
Yeah.
You know, one day, we're going to go past there, and we're going to go past KatsuCon, and we're going to go to, like, Florida or something. All the way.
Actually, I'm going to Animazement later this year.
Where's that?
North Carolina.
Oh, that's not Florida.
No.
But it's still the same highway going past.
It is, though I might just fly.
That's a good plan.
But, I mean, to sum up, KatsuCon is amazing. KatsuCon 12 was fantastic. The staff were amazing. Despite the fact that there was a crazy crowd, they managed it well. Oh, all right, I have one last thing. I almost forgot because I didn't write
out
my
notes. I'm sure you forgot a lot of other things, so just whatever.
Yeah, but I talked earlier about the staff of the con and how I interviewed them. Well, I got some on-the-record interviews, and I got some off-the-record interviews. And this ties into something that happened at the last KatsuCon. Mm-hmm. And if you're a Republican, I'm sorry.
Oh.
All right. So I went around Sunday interviewing all these staff people. I interviewed the head of security at the hotel, or at least he seemed like that. He was at least a big, high-up security guy. I interviewed one of the concierge guys, and I interviewed like 4 of the cleaning ladies.
Oh, so these were hotel staff, yes. not con staff.
Omni Showroom hotel staff.
Okay.
I interviewed like 3 of the cleaning ladies, and I interviewed just random like hotel like bellboy workers I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And without exception, they all basically said that they'd never seen anything like this before. They were amazed that despite the crowd and the yelling and the drunken rambling and the screaming and the costumes, nothing got broken and everyone was actually really polite and no one trashed the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Even the cleaning lady said, yeah, rooms get messy when you cram, 8 or 9 people into a room. Mm-hmm. But we expected that and it was no big deal.
Mm-hmm. And they do less cleaning when there's so many people. They just go, oh, no one will care. I'll clean it when they leave.
Yeah, I wish someday I'll play the tape if I ever get a tape recorder working. Because the one concierge guy and the security guy interviewed them together. And they went on and on about how it was just a great thing to see kids, you know, enjoying themselves in a non-drug, you know, non-violence, just kind of a, wow, these kids are doing something cool.
See, now here's the question is, you know, I'm not questioning whether they agreed with that or not. I'm questioning how much do these people say because they've been trained in hospitality ways as opposed to what they were really thinking, you know? I'm not saying there was like a huge gap, like they weren't actually thinking, these fucking kids, oh my God, I want to kill them all. But, you know, was their talk slightly slanted by their...
I would say definitely not, because the people I interviewed who were definitely minimum wage workers, like guys rolling things that like laundry around, they said the same thing.
Oh, okay.
And two, I interviewed a lot of people on the record, and then off the record, they basically said the same thing.
Oh, okay.
Except, now, this wouldn't really be much of a story unless I gave you the story from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at last KatsuCon... an unnamed member of our party clogged the toilet, and it wasn't me.
Dum, 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 dum. Did he plunge?
There was no plunger in the room.
Did he overflow?
No, this wasn't like the other unnamed party who clogged our toilet at our house.
Bastards.
A month ago.
Bastards.
You know who you are.
All of you. All right.
So, we call this maintenance guy. This is a cool dude comes up, and he plunges. And while he's up there, I just ask him, like, so, hey, what do you think of all these... crazy anime kids here. They're not giving this hotel trouble, are they? And without missing a beat, he looks at me and says, man, those Young Republicans was here last week. You guys ain't nothing.
The Young Republicans, you say?
Yeah.
Causing the most trouble?
He said they trashed the hotel, and they were rude and horrible. And we laughed about
that.
I
know there's a Republican, like, people who say, identify themselves as, like, fierce Republicans are often rude. Like, I'm rude too, but I'm not a Republican. But
well, I point out that I mean, we're saying Republican is in the party because I'm very conservative in a lot of ways, in a lot of my financial viewpoints and political viewpoints. But we're talking like young Republicans, as in basically young neocons nowadays.
Yeah, it's not saying if you're rude, you're Republican. That's backwards. But it seems that many, if the majority of people who say they're Republicans are rude and not good rude like me.
Because I'm
rude.
Playing Phoenix Wright. I have to back this up. Now, I have one witness testimony, the janitor guy, who told me that.
Mm-hmm.
So, fast forward to this year, KatsuCon 12. I'm interviewing all these people, and then I turn off the tape recorder, and I ask him, like, so off the record, what do you think? And they basically said the same thing. And then I asked a few of them, and here's the thing. Two different staff people brought this up on their own without prompting.
Mm-hmm.
One guy, I asked him if the kids were trashing the rooms, and he said, well, we had the Young Republicans here last week, and they destroyed the place. These kids are angels.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just like some maintenance guy walking around, like, because I got drunk Saturday night, and I wandered down. There's like three levels of sub-basements under the hotel.
You went into the sub-basements?
I was just wandering around down there in a drunken haze, like 2 a.m. on Saturday.
Oh, great.
And I ran into all these various staff people. They were cool, and I talked to them, and I have the tape of the interview, so I'm not making this stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
But then another guy who didn't wish to be named basically said the same thing. I was asking about, you know, how's the hotel handling this? Are these kids welcome back? And he said basically that, yeah, they're welcome back, especially after who we had last week. So I asked him, wait a minute, who did you have last week? And he said, I'm not at liberty to say. And then I asked him, well, I talked to some other guy, and he said the Young Republicans were here last week. And the guy laughed. And then he said, they have a reputation around the hotels here. So, I'm sorry if you're a Republican. I don't think that many conservative Republican types listen to Geek Nights. And if you do, I guess you know by now that we're not very quiet about our various viewpoints on things.
Yeah, but we hate those dirty hippies as much as you do.
Yeah.
At least I do.
But
dirty hippies.
I just found it hilarious that two KatsuCons in a row, the Young Republicans were there the weekend before us and trashed the hotel.
Yeah.
I think that says a lot about the Young Republicans.
You know, it actually makes me think, you know, there seems to be a lot of internet and blogs and podcasts going around about, like, the insides of different industries. Like, there are a bunch of pilot things where pilots have their inside pilot talk, you know, and, like, tech support guys that they're inside tech support talk. And we saw that forum, that great forum with the inside.
It's gone now. They took it down.
Oh, with the emergency room talk?
Yeah.
Oh, that was the best.
I know. I tried to link Scott Johnson to it, and he said the link's broken. I said, what the hell? And I followed it, and it was removed.
No, there was a great, a bunch of pre-med students who had to work in emergency rooms were telling great stories about all the stuff that you see in an emergency room. And it's all the inside jokes. You couldn't even tell what they were talking about half the time.
Yep.
Unless you knew about it, but...
But basically, apparently, no one ever gets beaten up by just one guy. It's always two dudes.
And the most dangerous thing you can possibly do is sock mob.
Standing on a corner,
mind your own business. So, no, but hotel people are really, and it's like, you know, job, you know, working in a hotel doesn't tend to be like a high class, high paying job. And those people, you know, tend not to be super internet savvy bloggers, podcasters. So it would be really cool to go around and like, get the inside stories from those kind of jobs, you know? People who aren't super internet savvy where their inside stuff isn't getting out and entertaining people. Stuff like, I don't know, plumbers, you know, that kind of stuff isn't out there. There's no inside plumbing, funny plumbing stories. No inside funny hotel stories. You know, so if we can reveal that stuff, that'd be pretty cool.
So I'm hereby starting a contest. If KatsuCon 13 has Young Republicans the weekend before it, I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but there's going to be a contest involving that.
How are you going to have a contest involving that?
I'll come up with something. I got a year.
I'll tell you what. If the Young Republicans are there the week before KatsuCon 13, and you go and see the Young Republicans and get, I don't know, some pictures or something to show how, you know, crazy they are, or a recording or anything so that we can put it on a podcast or a website or anything, then, I don't know, we'll pay for you to get into the KatsuCon. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something like that.
We'll do something, because a year from now, we'll probably have a lot more resources to dole out to Geek Nights.
Yeah. Maybe resources from someone else as opposed to from our work.
Well, actually, we had one guy offer to donate money to us. He asked us why we didn't have a PayPal button.
Because we have jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, unlike honestly, a lot of podcasts.
All told, this podcast costs us less than like $400, and that includes like the hosting and everything.
Yeah,
this
I was
like
paying for the hosting anyway. I haven't changed my hosting payment.
Yeah, and we're buying new hosting just for the MP3s. That's going to cost like $15 a month.
No, it's going to cost like 30 or 40, but
no, we don't. I added up. We don't need that much space for the podcast.
Yeah, I think we do. But anyway, still,
unless we keep doing long ones like this.
Yeah, it's still cheap. We have plenty of money. We're good.
Yeah, we moved into some meta bits there. KatsuCon 12 was awesome. If I remember anything to say about it, I'll do it real quick tomorrow. I'll talk someday about the video gaming that I kind of skipped on because it was deleted from the other podcast. Mm-hmm. But the basic summation of all that was that I saw at least 50 or 60 DSs like in active use, and I played DS stuff with people all con. I saw no more than 2 PSPs in the entire convention. And I'm possibly certain that it was actually the same guy I saw both times.
So it was one PSP and you saw him twice, but you were drunk the second time, I think.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure if it was the same guy or if there were 2 PSPs at the con. Mm-hmm. But everywhere you look, there was a little like cabal of like 4 or 5 kids playing Mario Kart or Bomberman, just all over the con constantly.
We should just have DS conventions. Everyone with a DS, come here, and we'll just keep playing games until the weekend's over.
And the PSP guy sat down. We were all playing Mario Kart, and he sat down with us. And everyone looks up at him, and this one kid sitting with us asks him, like, why the hell did you buy a PSP? There's no games for it. And the guy was great, because with a straight face, he says, I got games. I got a freaking Nintendo emulator.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said he wish he bought a DS.
Yep. Eh. What's he going to do? He could sell it back.
Well, I guess, I mean, the PSP doesn't seem to be a gaming system. It's definitely a useful bit of technology for, you know, movie watching and podcast listening and all that stuff. But there's really no games for it yet.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually a little better than the iPod for podcast listening because it has Wi-Fi. So you can use it to actually download the podcast direct to itself and you don't need to sync with the computer or anything.
Yep. In fact, one of our listeners...
That's the one thing I wish the iPod did.
One of our listeners a while ago gave us great instructions on how to do that in a previous episode.
Yeah, because imagine if I'm driving down the highway and a new episode of a podcast comes out and I just get it instead of having to get to work, update, get home. Right now, every day before I go to work because I want to have a podcast in the car, I have to wake up and manually update the stupid iPod before I leave. It's really annoying. You know, I wish it would just be updated.
So I can guarantee to you that Geek Nights, at least me, will be at KatsuCon 13.
I'll probably be there. I don't know.
And if you want to see us at another con, at least Scott, but possibly also myself and the other Scott, will be at the New York Comic Con.
New York Comic Con, Jacob Javits Center, New York City, this Saturday. It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but I'm only probably going to go on Saturday. I'll probably go all day Saturday from beginning to end. But, yeah, this Saturday, New York Javits Center, Comic Con.
And hopefully I won't be sick by then.
Yeah, and possibly... the Saturday after the Comic-Con, there is the non-con at Vassar in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Yeah, I used to live next to Vassar, and not to disparage them, it seems like a nice school, their anime club is scary.
Yeah, so they're having a little tiny con, like on the scale of a college con, you know.
Just however, basically all of our idiot friends from all over the world, or at least all over, you know, RIT and around, are all coming to our house that weekend.
Yeah, so I might go there on like Sunday for a day. It's like a $5-$10 con. It's yeah, a half so hour away.
If you're
deal.
Going to non-con and you want to see us, let us know you're going. Otherwise, you probably won't run into us because we're not going to be present there like we are at other cons.
Yeah, if you're looking for us at non-con, look for Maws.
Oh, that's the last thing I got, and then we're out.
All right.
So I ran into people have heard of Geek Nights at KatsuCon. I ran into people.
Holy crap.
Now, the best part was our friend Tex, we're in the bar Thursday night, and he turns to me, and he basically says, yes, you're doing that podcast, right? And I'm like, yeah. He says, yeah, one of the staffers I know calls me the other night, like, there's these two guys, and I can't stop listening to them. And they're talking about KatsuCon. I think they're going to be there. And Kex looks at her and says, wait a minute. I think I know those two fuckers. Mm. And sure enough.
He knows those two fuckers.
He knows everyone.
Yeah. If you don't know who Tex is, and you're at a con, ask us and we'll point at him, because I guarantee he'll be within visible range. I mean, you got a one out of two shot of that.
All right, I'm going to go pass out on my bed and die. So, we're out. And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for our opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com. If you like our podcast, you'll love our forums. Make sure you visit them. You can send your email feedback to geeknights@gmail.com. And if you want, you can leave us a voicemail at 206-333-1537.
Geek Nights airs every weeknight, Monday through Thursday.
Geek Nights is recorded with absolutely no studio and no audience. But unlike those other talk shows, it's actually recorded at night.